It's time for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven maverick. Hi, Arthur. How are you?
I live.
My favorite.
Yeah.
My favorite. Was that, grandmother or?
Pardon me?
Was that your grandmother or your father?
My father.
Your father.
My father was a Henny Youngman of Brooklyn. For instance, he always said that I was third and last generation Brooklynite. I always say that it's one aspect of being a food editor, which is what I was for the bulk of my career, a newspaper food editor, is that the stories write themselves almost because it's a seasonal subject. And so every season there's something that you could write about or talk about.
Right.
But I keep missing these important days like National Pizza Day or National Hot Dog Day is in July. I know that July is the hot dog month. I forgot what month is pizza. But we do have, and I missed Super Bowl. How could I have missed Super Bowl food? Super Bowl has its own cuisine.
True.
It does, yeah. And in fact, it's been years since I've had a good 7-layer dip, which used to be the number one Super Bowl food. I forget what all the layers are about. I do remember the first time I had this, though. And it was in the early 80s. Went to visit some friends in Detroit. And they were suburbanites. I didn't know that many suburbanites then. Even though I had worked for Newsday, the suburban newspaper, for 9 years. I don't know how I missed this, but in Detroit, I had my first 7-layer dip, which basically is glorified guacamole. Anyway, by the way, I made guacamole just a couple weeks ago because we had some avocados on the verge, and instead of just eating them as avocados, which we normally do, I made guacamole. But anyway, I discovered that my favorite corn chips are not good for dipping in guacamole because they're too fragile. So you got to find the right chip, apparently. But those of you who love this dip or love guacamole already know this. So I'm just not such a big guacamole guy. Anyway, that was used to be the number one Super Bowl food. I suspect this year it was more like chicken wings.
Nope.
No?
Nope.
What was it?
56,500 ways to make guacamole.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Well,
some things don't change.
I like guacamole.
No, I do too.
It's sort of like, who doesn't like guacamole? I don't know.
I'm
sure there are people who don't eat green food. Like kids don't eat green. I happen to love green food. Leaves of any kind, almost. Anyway, what about the chicken wings? Is that the second most popular? A font on this? What?
Yeah, but mostly, did you know that there was what did I find out? Oh, yeah, there's chicken wing soup.
Well, that's not what they mean.
And that straight from Western New York, I know that somebody who made it yesterday.
Well, you're from Buffalo, so of course the whole
Buffalo for 50 years, so no, I just happened to be talking to somebody.
No, but they made Buffalo chicken wings in Buffalo.
Yeah, that was originally where it started. Talk about something else that got totally. But
there are people who think that, I'm not joking either. I mean, there are people who think a lot of stupid things, especially in this day and age. They're encouraged to be stupid. In any case, the chicken wings, what was I even going to say about Buffalo chicken wings? Oh, there are people who think that they have some connection to Buffalo, like the mammal.
Sorry.
And don't get that it's from Buffalo.
Well, there are people who think a lot of things, and
I know
think
there
we
are.
Should just move on.
So actually, I was listening to somebody on TV who remembers saying what he was contributing to a Super Bowl party that he was going to, and he was bringing the crab dip, as if every Super Bowl party has to have crab dip. I wouldn't mind crab dip, but
very nice.
I didn't know that since I've never been to a Super Bowl.
I had no idea, but don't forget, we are recording this in during one of the strangest weeks because
we have Valentine's Day coming.
Valentine's Day and Lent simultaneously.
And Lent. So
yeah, I don't care where you fall on any spectrum. That is let's just call it an interesting.
We haven't missed Valentine's Day yet, and it's not. If I was a proper food editor, I would be devoting the whole food section to Valentine's Day. It's become such a big food day.
Was there ever a Lincoln's birthday?
No, but there was a phony Washington's birthday. And when we celebrated them separately, it was a cherry pie, because Washington supposedly
chopped down a cherry tree
and said, "I cannot lie, I did it."
Then Lincoln, I would have thought that there would have been something,
Lincoln's birthday. No,
muffins.
But you know what? It's Black History Month. It's Black History Month.
True.
So we can use this as an excuse to have grits, which I always say are just an excuse to have butter.
All right.
I love buttery grits. So on the grits story, we have a restaurant in my neighborhood, which, in fact, it's not the only one. I don't know who owns it, but it's called Sweet Chick, and it's a chicken and waffle place. And they do make very good fried chicken and really good waffles, but they also have shrimp and grits, which I love, except that until 2 weeks ago, if you ordered shrimp and grits, you got it in a cardboard container. That ruined the whole thing for the cardboard container.
And people who think that cardboard doesn't taste need to rethink that.
No, but I don't know. I think there's some romance to shrimp and grits.
Yeah.
And certainly it takes the romance away if you put it in a takeout container,
even if
you're sitting in the restaurant needing it.
Right.
So, but anyway, I said until 2 weeks ago, and now they have changed, and they have added some items to the menu with chicken involved, and they have put the shrimp and grits in a bowl, in a proper bowl. They're metal bowls. They're only using metal plates and bowls. Which makes sense because it's not a fancy place. It's like, in fact, you walk up to the cashier, order your food, and then they bring it to the table, but that's about as far as the service goes. Anyway, we like this place. So it's shrimp and grits. Another very Black History Month food, another excuse for butter, is something called spoon bread, which I never associated really with as soul food. My first time I had spoon bread was as a kid when we went to visit Colonial Williamsburg. Since then, I've learned that it is, in fact, an invention of a Black cook somewhere in the South.
That would make sense.
Probably in Virginia, where there was a strong French influence on the food. Remember, the rich white women, even the middle-class white women, were not maybe cooking for themselves. They had servants, and they were Black. And so Black women really had a big, big influence on the food of the South, even if it wasn't their food, because, of course, they had limited access to prime ingredients. In any case, spoon bread is basically a cornbread souffle. And I must say, it's one of my favorite things to put butter on. So that's a good excuse. By the way, I've gotten particular about butter. And I challenge you to tell me what the best butter you can buy is. Because for years, when butter was not so expensive, I was buying sort of whatever was on sale or Land O'Lakes. I mean, that was my default butter. But since then, and I still like Land O'Lakes, I find that there is a big difference between, like, supermarket brand butter, which I recently bought and was very disappointed in, and name brand butter, like Cabot's is a good...
Right. Breakstone.
Pardon me?
Breakstone.
Yeah, I haven't bought Breakstone in a long time. Listen, the king of all butter, to me, is Irish butter.
Right.
And Kerrygold you can buy everywhere nowadays.
But did you say that it's everywhere? Because it is everywhere.
Yeah, I just said it's everywhere.
Yeah, okay.
It's expensive, but it's I must say, it is superior butter. Agriculture in general in Ireland is purer than our agriculture. I mean, very few pesticides, chemical fertilizers, they don't really do that. Anyway, back to, I have to say, the supreme soul food to me is mac and cheese. And I have never had a soul food dinner without mac and cheese. And there is a sociological, historical reason for this, which is that, you know, macaroni is still a very inexpensive food. And the cheese, which is not an inexpensive food at all, was one of the foods that was given away to poor people, of course, supported by a big dairy industry that needed to dispose of a lot of milk. So processed cheese, which melts very well, was, in fact, a free food. Pair it with inexpensive macaroni, you got a protein-filled and carbohydrate energy dish. So mac and cheese. Now, I'm in search of a new mac and cheese recipe. The one that I make most frequently is a recipe, I don't want to say she invented it, I doubt that she invented it, but it was promoted by the food editor of all food editors, Cecily Brownstone. Cecily, who in fact was one of my mentors when I was in my early 20s, when I first met her, was the food editor of the Associated Press. And her recipes and columns were the most circulated, published food columns of their day, which is like the 1950s into the 70s. I think she ended up working at Associated Press for, I don't know, over 40 years, including she's the one who created the style, in journalism lingo, the style for writing recipes, and she codified that what we still use. In this, on this temperature, do that. Or in a bowl, blah, 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 do that. That was all Cecily. I mean, before then, don't ask. It wasn't organized. Anyway, Cecily's recipe is very interesting because you don't have to make a white sauce. You put everything, cooked macaroni, milk, cheese, you put everything in a casserole and bake it. It's really good. The other one that I make is the kind that where you make a white sauce, a bechamel, meaning flour and butter cooked together for a couple minutes, and then you add milk and cook it until it all thickens up into a nice sauce. And then you throw in an enormous amount of cheese. I always like a combination of cheddar and Gruyere, but another good one is cheddar and fontina. You could do all cheddar if you like. I usually throw in some grated Parmesan cheese for that extra little, in current parlance, umami. And I either bake it with or without a crumb top. So now I noticed that Lydia Bastianich makes a third kind of macaroni and cheese, and I have to try this. She grates the cheese, but she uses a combination of fontina and cheddar and a little bit of Parmesan, too. So I really like that. She takes the grated cheese and she soaks the cheese, the grated cheese, in milk. And she never adds a thickening. She then, after, I think, a half an hour of soaking the cheese, she puts it over a low heat and melts the cheese into the milk. And that's what she puts her macaroni in. Of course, salt, pepper. I always like to add a little nutmeg to mine. I think it, it's sort of a catalyst for other flavor to come up. Salt, of course. And you pour that into a casserole, and then you top it, Lydia does anyway, with coarse breadcrumbs. She grates her breadcrumbs on the coarse side of a grater. I do this myself sometimes when I want coarse breadcrumbs. And tosses it with some grated cheese and melted butter, and puts it on top of the macaroni, which is now dressed in this cheese milk sauce, and bakes it in the oven. Doesn't that sound good?
Hmm.
So it's Black History Month all this month, so if you need an excuse to make macaroni and cheese, it's a good enough one, I think. Anyway, Valentine's Day is problematic. This is not my opinion. This is a fact. It is the second worst day to eat in a restaurant. Mother's Day. More restaurant business on Mother's Day than any other day of the year. I think Thanksgiving might be up there with the worst days to eat in a restaurant. But certainly Valentine's Day is anti-romantic in most places. I mean, you go to your most romantic restaurant, it's going to be mobbed. The staff is going to be stressed. It's not so pleasant. The vibe isn't pleasant. The food might be good. I think stay home, buy yourself and your loved one a very large box of chocolate bonbons, and make that Valentine's dinner. The other problem, if you eat home, the problem is who's going to clean up.
Exactly. And not just that, what if making things is not the
exactly.
Not equal, not to mention the fact, and again, I obviously fixated on this bit, but for those who do forego things for Lent, here, maybe you know the answer to this. Can you change what you are foregoing on Thursday? Or do you have to do it on Tuesday? You have to do it the day...
The day before.
You have to, right? You can't swap.
Listen, I've had my birthday changed on me. You can change Valentine's Day if you want to.
So does everybody.
I would hope that if you loved your loved one, you celebrated your love more than just one day a year. So I think that's my answer to that. But, I mean, it's like Super Bowl. I actually watched through the halftime show. The game was so boring, the first half, that I didn't have any thought to keep watching, only to find out this morning that the second half was the exciting part of the game. And not that I'm a football fan, I'm not, but I thought, well, most of America is watching this. And I was curious about the commercials. So we did have special food for Super Bowl. I made a steak for myself. I mean, I was the one who wanted steak. And Bob got sautéed spinach with garlic and olive oil. He loves that. And I must say, I used frozen spinach, and it was sensational. It was as good as any fresh spinach. Truly, I think I said this. This is not a plug, but one of the things that Whole Foods does very well in their store brand is frozen vegetables.
Right. No, we talked about this last week. I'm just going to throw in here that as it happened, I had fresh spinach that I sautéed that was delicious.
Yeah, I'm totally into green things. So, and then as a treat, because it was Super Bowl, I made mashed potatoes. I have a really good ricer, so it's really not a big deal. Boil up some potatoes and make mashed potatoes. So that was our special Super Bowl dinner.
So did you just turn it into Valentine's dinner?
I don't know. Wednesday is Valentine's Day.
No, Tuesday is Mardi Gras. Wednesday is Valentine's
Day. Tuesday is Mardi Gras, right. I did say I was going to make a real lasagna di carnevale, meaning I said this last week. The American idea of lasagna is the Neapolitan lasagna for carnevale, which is Fat Tuesday, which is Mardi Gras, which is pancakes, Shrove Tuesday.
Shrove Tuesday, also Pancake Day.
Also Pancake Day. So many foods for Lent. I mean, really, it's not a deprivation time at all.
No.
I don't know if you remember this couple. They were on TV cooking. The Romagnolis. Anyway, they were on the famous PBS channel in Boston after Julia Child. Not important.
Yeah,
they wrote a whole book on Italian Lenten food. So, and by the way, it's not a big book, but it could have been a big book. I mean, some of my favorite Italian Lenten things are not in their book. I know this book very well. I've cooked from it many times. And they were a delightful couple. Margaret, her name was Margaret. She was American. This is coming back to me. And I think she died first. And he continued on, writing another book after she passed away. And I can't remember his first name. But he was Italian. I don't remember from where, I don't remember from where. Romagnoli, if anybody remembers them. They were very delightful. And good cooks. And they knew their Lenten food very well. There's some of these Lenten dishes in Italy, anyway, are so popular that they now make them all year.
Well, maybe that should be the Valentine's Day meal.
I don't know. You could do takeout for Valentine's Day, then when nobody has to do the dishes.
There are lots of things.
Chocolate has become associated.
You can do whatever you want. You can all you have to do is be loving and make it nice, and
right.
Bingo.
I agree. So chocolate has become associated with Valentine's Day. I think it's because I think chocolate is a genuine aphrodisiac, and women in particular. Love chocolate. I'm not sure what that biological mechanism is there, but the other one is cheese. So if you really want to woo a woman, you might put out a cheese board, which is making me laugh because I belong to a social club in the neighborhood here, and they just sent out a memo this morning that for Valentine's Day, they have a Valentine's Day special. And what is it? A cheese and charcuterie board.
Well, there you go. I don't know how we are for time, but we can run this.
We're okay.
We could run this one for two weeks.
We're meandering here, but we have a few minutes. But these are just my random seasonal thoughts.
Yeah, except that this is supposedly a time when there's not much going on, which I think.
Well. In the produce department.
That's true.
This is the worst season for fruit.
But you solved that with your frozen veg.
Yeah, I did. You know what? I'm bereft if I don't have a lot of vegetables. And especially in the winter, when there's not much out there anyway, I have no problem these days stocking up on frozen vegetables. Not every frozen vegetable is created equal.
True.
Spinach is great. Actually, any greens are great. I recently bought, I had to have collards for some reason. I bought frozen collards. They were very good. Collards are a tough green.
I was just going to say, that's not a bad idea, as I'm sitting here scrawling a note for myself, because... That you basically have to work on for about a week. I'm joking,
obviously.
To get them tender enough to eat.
Well, I made some the other day, fresh ones. Of all the dark greens in the market, collards are usually the least expensive.
Right.
But they do. You can't cook them with the stems, I've learned, the hard way. You have to really get those tough stems out. And the way you do that is fold the leaf in half with the stem on the outside and then zip it up. And you can zip off the stem. Where it's going to come off is usually a tender point. So if it doesn't go all the way up, it's okay. But you can get the tough stems off that way. Yeah. And it took me... you know, I was just boiling these. I was adding them to a dish, so I just wanted to par cook them. It took a good 15 minutes of boiling, a really fierce boiling, to get them tender. And then I tenderized them again. After they cooled down, I cut them in. I didn't chop them, but I cut them into, you know, strips.
What we used to do is basically that, but first, you know, take out the most.
Yeah, the tough stems.
And then slice them in strips. And that
so you could have done that. I could have done that before or after.
So we used to do that at the beginning, and that solved.
Yeah, doesn't make a difference really.
Right.
That I can tell. I have to say though, I really was tempted to. I had no use for it at that moment. Freeze the collard cooking water.
The liquor, the pot liquor. Yeah, it's great.
I know, but it wasn't really pot liquor because, if you want to make a good pot liquor, you got to put a bone of
you could
like
just
that.
Use the collard green liquid.
Yeah, but just the water. I mean, I guess like we could have just dressed them with some vinegar and oil. But actually, I put them. I cooked them further by sautéing them with some minced carrot and chickpeas.
Yeah.
So we had a little chickpea dish. Really, chickpeas and greens couldn't be healthier than that.
Right,
anyway,
well, again,
the frozen vegetables are really handy. We're expecting, you know, any minute now, there's going to be a big winter storm, which you're going to get as well as we're going to get. And it's comforting to know there is some spinach in the freezer.
We'll see. The ones that are projected are always the ones that are, shall we say, most interesting. Anyway.
Anyway, this has encouraged me, by the way. I've had such good luck with this line of frozen vegetables that I'm now going to branch out, see what else they have there. I don't cook corn very often, but I'm
that's easy. That's the easiest frozen corn. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Well, a friend of mine who has taken to he has two picky daughters to feed. I think like a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. They do like chicken, though, and they love potatoes. So he's been making what I suggested months ago, which is just roasting the chicken thighs. I do. He does thighs and drumsticks on top of a bed of potatoes. And he said, "Oh, I tried it the other day with corn, a box of frozen corn. I let it defrost." Scattered it on the bottom of my skillet, put the chicken on top like you do for the potatoes, and he said it was really good. So I'm tempted.
I would take a box of frozen corn, throw it in some butter,
You don't even have to put butter in it. What are you doing? Is you're letting it cook underneath
lime
the chicken
and put
fat.
Some cayenne on it
I put it in a 450-degree oven for 40 minutes. It's a long time, but so I don't know how the corn is going to come out. I know the potatoes come out great. And I've tried cutting the potatoes in different ways, slicing them sort of thickish, making wedges, making large cubes. And different cuts take a different amount of time, but they're all good. And if you find that when your chicken is done, the potatoes aren't quite done enough, just put them back in the oven for another 5 minutes.
Right. Now I think we really are out of time, but I'm still
going
to say...
I think we are.
What I just said about the corn was only for the corn. It had nothing to do with potatoes or chicken or anything.
No. I don't know. I just got off on this track because, in fact, Jeffrey says, this is really good, and I trust Jeffrey.
Okay. Well, we will find out if he's right.
We will find out. Exactly. Well, everybody, have a happy Valentine's Day, a easy Lent, post-Super Bowl...